Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Never just started for Adam White, though. He's been ready to roll for 3 days. He can't wait to talk sport. He's back again on a Monday morning. Good morning, Whitey.
Yes, good morning. I'm not as excited as you, though, because, of course, Jack Miller winning again.
There you go.
Off the charts, sort of excited for a Monday morning.
Real mentor stuff coming to the fore again.
Well, it'd be good if you could talk to him, then you probably could mentor him.
But... Well, on the line, I mean, we'd have private conversations, of course.
Right, of course.
So I'm keeping him up and about. When it rains, it pours. All you need is just one moment where you can find your way to the victory, to the finish line first, and that makes the world of difference, not just in motor racing, in horse racing. You know, those horses that finally win one and all of a sudden they break through for two and three and four wins in a row. It's no different to the world of professional sport. Once you believe you can, the world changes. This is what the Kangaroos will be going through now after their win on the weekend.
Yes.
They believe they can. Jack Miller knows he can, and now he's gone and taking out the French Grand Prix overnight. Magnificent stuff from Aussie Jack.
Yeah, he's doing very well.
Do you think he'll ever return our call?
No, I'm not sure.
Probably not.
I'm not sure. I know, obviously, there's a lot of footy to talk about across the course of today, but lots of really interesting things are happening in other sports as well, particularly overseas, but even here in Australia as well. So I'm not sure when we're going to get time to talk about these things, but I'm looking forward to discussing them.
We've got an hour to get rolling before we get to footy with Jimmy. So we've got plenty of time, Whitey. Get ready to the launch after I welcome Adam Ramanauskas to the table for the first time today. The former Bombers champion, these days manager to the Stars. Morning, Rama.
Very good. Yes, going well. You?
Going great.
Yes, going great.
Going great.
That's not bad by you. This early in the morning.
It's Monday.
There has been plenty of sport going on over the weekend. I loved what the NRL did over the weekend.
Magic Round?
Loved it.
Which part of Magic Round did you love?
Oh, just the games. Just all there. The big crowds there at Suncorp, obviously. The Storm yesterday, brilliant. Again, unfortunately, Ryan Pappenhausen got knocked out, which was a little concerning for him, no doubt. So,
yes.
But the atmosphere there, I know the NRL, I believe, are going to continue on with this now next year, moving forward. I loved it. Love the atmosphere there, just game after game after game.
So the one-stop shop, so it's like your Bunnings for NRL. You just go one place and everything's there.
How good?
Not a bad idea?
Yep, love it.
Would we pinch it?
We should look at it.
We kind of did it last year anyway.
Well, yes.
Well, there's a concern over crowds in the AFL. I think this time in 2019, there were 700,000 more fans that attended our games. So
700 over the 9 rounds.
Yes.
That's about 80,000 a round. Close enough.
Yep. So you look at Richmond on Saturday night, there was 19,000, I think, there.
8.5, yeah.
So
that whole Richmond Marvel thing,
it's rubbish.
I'm fascinated by the play. I know what the end goal is from Richmond. They want to play at the MCG.
Saturday it was freezing.
Freezing.
Freezing. The game was obviously on TV, so you can watch it there. GWS obviously don't have a big supporter base. They sort of have the old renter crowd in Melbourne where they probably pay a few people to come and watch in the cheer squad.
Jimmy's going to be upset with you.
No, that's okay.
He's going to be upset.
Jim needs to admit that. That's okay. but in saying that, it was a brilliant game of football where there should have been more people there to watch that game.
Damien Hardwick on the Marvel Stadium situation post-game, I found it fascinating.
They don't come. So if you want big crowds, play our home games at the G. Pretty simple solution for mine. Mate, I hate coming here. Probably shouldn't say that, but...
Why is that?
Hey?
Why is that?
Well, the MCG has got soul. It's got Richmond people there. Our people don't come here. Plain and simple.
Because you tell them not to, Dimmer. Brendan Gale didn't want to be there on Friday morning either in the paper. Like the sell from Richmond on that game was quite phenomenal. An opportunity to get 40,000 people there.
Under the roof,
cauldron atmosphere. Yeah. No one responds. Richmond's fans are the noisiest in the competition. Mm-hmm. And there's no team in footy, I reckon, that responds better to a noisy venue when it's going their way on the field, the way they respond on the field, than Richmond. So why wouldn't you sell as much as you can, hype it up and say, this is going to be awesome, great chance to raise the roof at Marvel Stadium, rip it off with the noise we're going to make. 18.5 when they made their run on Saturday night was unbelievable, the noise. It was brilliant. Imagine 40, 45 there doing the same thing for the Tigers against the Giants. Why wouldn't you try and sell that? Make some more cash for your footy club. It's 3.5 Ks up the road. It's got no soul. Richmond supporters and people there. It's because you tell them not to go because you hate it. No, it makes no sense.
I agree. There's one other thing I was disappointed with on the weekend, Whitey. I think Travis Old, for the first time, got the schedule wrong.
Which part? Was that?
Saturday night.
Two great games?
Yeah.
Yeah, but look, going into the season, he wouldn't have necessarily thought that the Giants were going to be any good. In fact, 6 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago when they'd worked it out, I don't think he would have thought that the Giants were going to be the team they have been in the last few weeks.
I think the Q clash should have been that night.
And put the Richmond Giants game as the Twilight game.
Twilight,
gee,
yeah.
Damien Howitt wouldn't have been happy. Oh. It would have made it even worse.
Poor old Dimmy just can't take a trick at the moment. That's going.
But I, if you don't have KO, obviously, I was flicking, and I was, you know, you want to watch both games.
Yeah, absolutely, it is frustrating. And so, as I said before, at the very least, they could have an hour differential between the night games. One starting at 7:10, one starting at 8:10. So in Adelaide, it's not that late. The start, it's still 7:40 local time. I still think they've got to be better at those sorts of things. I think the interesting thing with Richmond is that it looks like, and this might not be true, but it looks like they're really playing on the us against their mentality again, to try and almost get this motivation for the club and for the team. We saw obviously what happened with Shea Bolton and also Daniel Rioli. Then Damien goes down this path. I mean, clearly it's not going to change. There is a contract in place. Now, particularly the AFL own the stadium. Yeah. There is a responsibility that all clubs play home games. Well, not all clubs, but a lot of clubs will have to play home games there. And that's just what happens. It's not new, and it will continue to happen in the future.
I think one very astute observation yesterday on Twitter that I looked at and actually liked, from a journalist. It was from our man.
You actually like, you pressed, I pressed the love
like button. I pressed the like button. I thought it was worthy of a like.
Okay.
And it was because of your man, Rama. He's your man. Daniel Cherney from the
Daniel Cherney.
Who you bought breakfast for, and you didn't actually know who he was in a trip to Tassie one day. Thought he was the tech for your radio profession. He was tweeting last night, and I think it's a very good point. Remarvel Stadium. Don't forget, it was this asset that kept the AFL going last year. You can whinge about it, but it saved jobs and maybe even clubs. That's a good point, I reckon. Marvel Stadium, considering the ability for the AFL to redraw against that last year and allow the game to go on, and some clubs, perhaps, who knows, to survive. I think we should be very thankful for Marvel Stadium as an industry.
It's a great asset.
And maybe you should buy him lunch again to talk about it. That's a good point. I just find that whole byplay fascinating from Richmond. I understand they want to get games at MCG. They play 26 games a year there.
Okay, then what about the David Teague situation?
Oh, Teague and the mayor.
But who had the mayor, David Teague or the Carlton Football Club?
What do you mean?
With regard to what?
So David Teague...
Let's have a listen to David and what he said post-match yesterday.
Assessed his game better than the way I handled the media conference the other day. That was pretty average by me. I thought he was good. I don't know how many tackles. I think he's had about 10 tackles. Tough inside. Competed hard. He's been a great player for us for a long time. And I thought today he was tough again and he competed, put his head over the ball and he won it. And when he didn't, he pressured well.
What was 10 tackles for Paddy Cripps, 27 disposals?
7 clearances.
So okay. There's more in that grab where he talks about how he essentially lied in a press conference.
It was his worst press conference of his career.
Yeah, so there was the article in the paper by Michael Gleeson from The Age who said that he had a stress fracture. Patrick Cripps had a stress fracture in the preseason and that it was affecting him play. David Teague kind of said that didn't happen. He couldn't remember what the injury was, all these sorts of things, or when he had it. And this was during the week. Yep. And then Carlton came out over the weekend, sort of not privately, well, kind of privately, to say, yeah, it actually did happen. And David Teague was forced to sort of backpedal quite significantly after the game. I'm just really surprised that all happened. Now, I don't think there is any doubt that clubs will always protect players when they're injured. Lachie Neale's gone through a similar thing at Brisbane early in the season, and this happens forever. But he was so categoric in saying that the story was wrong, and then for them to backpedal only a couple of days later, David Teague would have known that those questions were going to come during the week because the article was in the paper before his press conference.
Mm.
So he should have been going in there expecting those questions to come. So that's what I don't understand. So he would have had time to think about what he was going to say to those questions.
Yeah, but who's that on? Is that on?
Oh, I think it's on the club. Mm. I think the media person
there should have briefed him.
But the media person might have as well. Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. There's something strange has gone on there that they would... I mean, David Teague may have been given advice and chose to go another way. I don't know, but... Just
now, if he read Michael Gleeson's article, that's on him. That's on Teague. If he hadn't read the article, the media person should have said, "Look, him.
But Rama, there are plenty of stories."
Okay, do you get briefed?
Yes.
Before,
absolutely.
There are plenty of stories, though, Rama, where they're out there in the press or on television, digital, whatever, that clubs will say categorically are not true when they're true. More so than in trade time.
As the great Kevin Butler says, it's the second language of football.
And so often it's the journalists that come off second best because most people won't believe the journalists. But in this situation, I just thought it was interesting because to me it feels like, and again, this is just a perception thing, it feels like it's a club under increasing pressure and a coach under increasing pressure that this sort of thing is happening. So anyway.
Well, he did go on to say, he answered it like that because he was just annoyed by the whole story because he'd been training for 5 weeks and it was in the past. So it wasn't relevant to his form of recent weeks.
Well, then say that.
Well, that's what he could have said. Yeah. But for whatever reason, the communication messaging wasn't that. And therefore, he found himself in an awkward situation. This is the problem in footy full stop. You actually can't say... answer questions without having a line in your head from the direction. And you media types, all you blokes over there, Whitey, with your messaging, all you people telling all the players, and we've seen it in the inner sanctum, and we've seen it with coaches through interviews.
Yeah, we've had a number of players come in here.
Messages to sell.
Yes, with notes on their phone talking about what the club would like them to say.
Absolutely.
And it's unnatural and correct. It puts you...
And we want the opposite.
You can get yourself in trouble, as we've seen on the weekend.
I agree with you.
From the whole industry.
But this is a different situation here where David Teague categorically said something wasn't true and then a couple of days later...
Yeah, but that's not new. It's just a matter of that the story got out.
Jeez, imagine Sheets. If he had to apologise every time that he made something up. That would be an amazing list. That would be an amazing list.
That's a good point.
He used to do a press conference, Whitey, because when you were a field journalist.
All you types.
Monday and probably...
Monday, Wednesday.
Yeah.
Monday and Wednesday.
Yeah, Wednesday or Friday, I used to do one. On the boundary?
No, never on the Friday, but Monday and Wednesday. And if you stayed for the entire training session when they're all open, he'd give you another one after training if something happened at training. He'd reward the people that would stay.
Yeah. Albeit, he lived around the corner. So.
Rather than the unprofessional ones that would go early, he'd say, I'll give you something because you stayed. So the last thing I'll say on the David Teague thing, and Carlton, it's two things. It's the pressure of them not winning... as much as they'd like to be winning, but it's also the increased pressure, I think, on the whole Patrick Cripps discussion because he hasn't signed yet.
So that's
what it looks like. Again, it's just a perception thing. That Patrick Cripps, and I hope he does. I hope he stays at Carlton, he becomes a one-club player and all those sorts of things. But anything around him now, I feel, is becoming hypersensitive because he's not playing great footy, he's had the injury, and he's a high-profile player that is out of contract and there are Perth clubs that are circling. That's all.
And Carlton should be, they should not be 3-6. They should
well,
be.
Well, that's where we disagree.
Well, stand by for that. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, we can talk to Jim about that.
Where they are is exactly where they are.
There's only one game that could have gone, well, if you looked at the start of the year, you did the ticks and crosses game at the start of the season. Probably only one that the outcome wasn't as we probably would have predicted. Chris is in Ascot Vale, wants to talk about the Kangaroos, I think, after their win on the weekend. Hello, Chris.
Daniel, good morning. You whitey, look out. We're back in town. Just a quick one, boys. Is that next time you have Todd Goldstein in, can you just ask him about the spirit around the place and how it's changed since the start of the year? Because Xavier Uniacke, he was quoted in the paper saying, whether he said it or not, it's another issue, is that what he's noticed at the start of the year, there was no spirit like in the first few games, and that was obvious when you watched it. And like the way that Noble's coached, given the injury list, like you look at our Magoos, they get smashed every week. He's doing a great job.
Oh, we've said that a little bit around here, I reckon, Chris, and particularly when Jim's in and on Fridays too, when Boomer's in, that we're liking what we're seeing from the Kangaroos. You can see what's happening. Clearly got no players to play. Like, it's unbelievable what they're actually doing.
The improvement from round four in just raw numbers has been phenomenal.
Yeah.
Particularly with the personnel. They're doing a great job. David Noble spoke, I think, last week before the Collingwood game about it's not necessarily winning, it's about the process. He's gone down the Brett Brown sort of path. It's all about the process.
But that's what you have to do when you've got a team that's not capable of contending week in, week out.
Little wins.
Through inexperience and talent just at this stage. Give him a chance to grow and don't focus on the 4 points. Yeah, absolutely play for him, but don't focus on
them. You coach quarters rather than games.
Or even moments.
Yeah.
I can't wait for the next couple of minutes, but just before we go to our man... the thing with North Melbourne that was most impressive was that they were five goals down. It looked horrible for them.
Yes.
Early. Hawthorn were just doing what they pleased. So for North to be able to come back from that position, it wasn't just that they started well and maintained it. They could have very easily turned up their toes and they didn't. So I thought that was the most impressive part of the victory.
Simkin, Cunnington, Davies, Uniacke. Clearing the ball
37 times between them.
And how many did Hawthorn have as a
29.
Total?
29. It was remarkable. I've never seen dominance like it from three players. Like, they owned the game. It's quite phenomenal.
And Warple played pretty much the entire game.
Warple
as
had four
as a forward.
Or five.
Yeah, but he played the entire game pretty much as a forward.
No, Mira was playing a lot forward.
He was.
It's an unusual day. We'll talk about that after the 7. We've got a Twitter poll up at the moment. Do you hate Marvel Stadium like Damien Hardwick? Yes, 58%. No, 42%.
Hate's a very strong word.
Well, this is what the poll says.
We tell our children not to use the word hate.
Well, lucky the kids aren't involved in the poll. Very important stuff there. Yes, 58. No, 42. I don't get it. I don't understand. I think it's a good place to go and watch footy.
Yeah.
I don't get it. And someone says off the SMS, doesn't mean it's when I was talking about saving the game last year. Someone says, doesn't make it immune from criticism, Daniel. Well, criticism from what? Explain yourself. That just doesn't make it immune. Tell me why. Goodness gracious me, Richmond people. Petulant. Sam's in Swan Hill. Hello, Sam.
How are you, Daniel?
I'm very well, Sam. How are you?
How are your cohorts? Good.
Well, my boys, they're Essendon supporters, so they're having a good time at the moment.
That's great. No, Daniel, I just want to congratulate Rammer. He's got it right again. We're going to win the Coleman medal. We kicked a goal after half time. We look like we're certainly for the wooden spoon. You know, the fans are jumping out of their skin. I mean,
how did you feel in the first quarter, Sam?
But Rammer, the game's not over in the first.
No, it was pretty. Look, I'll agree with you. It was pretty miserable for you guys after quarter time,
and that's
the question. Why was it so miserable after quarter time when you're playing with so much dare and dash in that first quarter, and then it went back to this game of protection and not wanting to make a mistake and not wanting to take a risk, and that's where Sydney pounced.
Yeah. Listen, we've got a guy up here that rang... who was the guy that coached Footscray come from Hawthorn? Wallace.
Yep. Harry Wallace, yep.
He's a Bulldog member, and he rang Wallace during the game and told him what he should have done, and from then on, the Dogs are starting to win. You know, I think Buckley needs someone to change him a little bit. Does he listen to anyone? He's got 16 coaches next to him that have all been there for a long time, but nothing seems to change.
No, you make a fair point. I was shocked on Saturday watching that Collingwood game where they could be so good and so attacking to then just the complete opposite after that, Sam. So they, you know, it's a really easy game for Nathan Buckley to review. Why is this happening? Is it my instruction, or we're not, or the players not carrying out instruction on the ground?
Well, it was 1-10. After quarter time, so it wasn't as though they didn't have the ball down there to score. But one goal is
but
one goal.
But they stopped. They started going sideways and they started going backwards and they slowed the ball down. They weren't playing on from mark.
There was a reset from Sydney. Yeah. I spoke to John Longmire yesterday. There was a reset from Sydney as to how they defended and their work around the contest, which made it a bit more difficult than that first quarter. But one goal, regardless of 11 shots, one goal is still one goal.
The interesting part for me with Collingwood on Saturday above almost anything else, and again, this is just a perception thing, but Nathan Buckley seemed particularly agitated in the box, more so than usual.
You're really body language at the moment, aren't you? You're into that.
No, but I was watching it closely, and it seemed to be agitated.
It is interesting watching the coaches when they are upstairs, because a lot of them are down now with the players and like, but upstairs, when a coach gets agitated, it's mainly because half, and correct me if I'm wrong here, the players aren't carrying out instruction the way.
That's normally a real motivator for coach agitation.
That's right. So seeing Nathan Buckley on Saturday.
Did you pick it up?
Yeah. And he does show emotion in the box, but I thought on Saturday particularly, it felt like what he was saying to the players wasn't getting carried out.
Yeah. For the first time, despondence wasn't the right word. It was a real, almost defeatist type body language. And again, it's just a perception. You only see selected things on the television, but it's not usually what you see from Nathan Buckley. And they never looked like winning that game. Even though the result wasn't a massive difference on the scoreboard, you just knew once Sydney got three goals in front, Collingwood wasn't going to be able to peg it back. And that was the problem last year in the shorter games. When they got behind, you knew that they weren't going to be able to get back in. As well as they defended, you knew that, well, this game's gone because Collingwood can't score quickly.
Port Adelaide at the MCG Sunday. Port aren't going great.
No, Port Adelaide will dine out because that's what they do. They take hold of the teams that are struggling.
Thank you, Sam. Just hang on for the Pies. Just hang on. We'll talk about it after 7. We're getting too deep into footy before 7. Too deep.
Port Adelaide and Geelong the next two weeks, Collingwood.
Off the SMS. It's a cold joint, talking about Marvel Stadium.
Oh, it is cold. No, I agree with that.
It's winter.
It is cold.
Imagine how cold it would be in the MCG.
But I'm saying,
I've never heard more stupidity in my life.
It is actually colder when they close the roof in that stadium.
Maybe. Don't know.
It is.
Hang on. Have you got some data to back that up?
I've played a lot of games.
Is it just observation?
You know what it is.
I used to wear a long sleeve in there.
I used to wear it anyway because you're a loser.
You know what it is.
Spaghetti arms.
You know what it is. Now, let's be sensible for a moment. One thing that is a real problem is how slippery it is.
Yes. Yeah, no, that's a problem.
And especially on the right half-forward flank, if you're watching on television to the left of screen, there seems to be this spot where everybody slips over.
It's everywhere. Slippery because they forget to close the roof and it rains before the game.
Do they not close it before the game? Sure, they close it hours before the game.
Yeah, but when they close it, if it's rained already, there's water on the ground.
But also,
it doesn't necessarily dry out. They should put the lights on it.
The condensation factor plays a part too with the roof closed.
I'm a Saints fan. I don't like Marvel Stadium. Saints fans don't live near the city. Now, that's... I can't get my head around that. It's three kilometres up the road. Like, it's not far. If you don't live near the city, you still don't live near the city for the MCG either. Don't give me that. I don't want to hear it. It's stupid.
It's a hard place to get to.
The garbage.
It is a hard place to get to.
And if you, why? Why is it?
If you're wanting to drive there.
Ah, right.
It's a hard place to get to.
You can drive and park and then catch a tram.
Yeah, exactly. But so a lot of people like to drive and just go to the football.
A lot of people are finding reasons to not like it.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing at the moment. Terrible joint for footy off the SMS.
Where would they like the stadium? We are so fortunate that we have stadiums in the heart of the city. We've got two world-class stadiums in the heart of our city.
It's a bigger problem than people thinking the stadium is cold. People are not going to the football, full stop.
Well, that's bigger. That's
the bigger problem.
That's a different conversation.
It's a different conversation, but that's the reality of where we're at the moment.
On your sporting trips that you've been to overseas, Whitey, did you go to the NFL?
Yes, I did, actually.
Whereabouts?
I went to MetLife Stadium.
Was it cold there?
Not particularly. It was a beautiful day, actually.
When I went, it was snowing at MetLife Stadium.
I went to the snow in Green Bay. It was pretty cold that day.
Yeah. But you know what? Crowd's still turned up.
Yeah, well, we've got some challenges with that, with ticketing and requirements and all that sort of stuff. So there's no doubt that's a factor.
I agree. It's, yeah, that's probably the, it's more the hardness of getting there and scanning in and doing all those other bits and not being able to leave your seats and ushered here and ushered there. Yeah, and
that's annoying. And I get that. I understand that.
The TV figures are down as well.
Yeah. But being told that
Fox isn't, but free-to-air is.
Being told you shouldn't go probably doesn't help from the clubs involved.
I'm going to throw something straight off the top to you, Jimmy.
Okay.
Because it's a text message. Yeah. Hi, lads. Who is in more trouble? Hawthorn or Collingwood?
Jeez. You're on Maradona stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Where is my man Maradona?
Yeah.
That is still one of the great... Because I got the visual there. Yeah. Clearly, got
a little bit of Gil McLaughlin about it too.
Oh, God, the visual of that is actually funnier than the audio.
I'm going to say, answer your question, gave me enough time. Good padding, gentlemen. I'm going to say Collingwood, just off the basis. When you have a bad year, you look forward to something, which is the draft. And they don't own their first two picks at the moment, Collingwood.
But they will get the best player.
Yeah, but it's going to cost them a lot in draft points. Here you go.
I think they've got a lot of those points already.
Yeah, but you'd like him and some players to fast track it. You'd like to get in front of it.
Yeah, one player.
Well, they got those two first round picks last year. That's how they use them. So
the next part of that question, Jimmy, is Hawthorn will hold, let's just say, picks 2, 21, 22, something like that.
Yep.
If you're Hawthorn's list manager, are you keeping on to Wingard, Mitchell and O'Meara, or are you thinking, while they are the age they are, we'll put up a hand and say, this hasn't worked, to try and hold on. Best chance for us to bounce back is to at least trade one of those three.
No, I'd hold on to them unless the deal is so compelling from someone else. Like, no one really pays overs anymore, and we've got probably one of the best here, Rammer, who he deals with this. This is his finals period when trade and free agency and all that sort of goes on, and you're swapping picks for players. Like everyone wants to trade their worst for the opposition's best. You know, like everyone thinks they're getting Marcus Bontempelli for the list player number 42. When this comes up, it just doesn't happen anymore.
No, I understand that, but surely, leave O'Meara out to the side for a little bit, but even Wingard. Wingard came to the football club to be part of success. Now he's staring down the barrel. We're still his best footy. He's riding the sweet spot. He should be riding the sweet spot of his best footy in a deep rebuild. Surely he's contemplating, should I be actually moving on here because I'm not having success for the next 5 years?
You've just asked a different question there. So you asked if you're Hawthorn's list manager. Now you're asking if you're...
I'd be encouraging you if I was the list manager.
Yeah, I'm not so sure, because what's really difficult to find is half forwards who can go on ball and hit the scoreboard.
Correct.
Wingard's a brilliant footballer.
So if you're going to do the rebuild, which they're going through that transition, in 2 years' time, you're going to be looking for a Wingard. Look, who you've already got.
Yeah.
I get your point. I get it. Like, he's the dream of go to Hawks, I'm under Alistair Clarkson, they've won premierships, they've got, as you mentioned, O'Meara, Mitchell will be thereabouts, all that sort of stuff. Hasn't panned out that way, but, he's there. If I'm the Hawthorn list manager, as we said, I'm holding on to those type of players, unless the offer is so good.
So Rama, has Hawthorn got enough time? Like, are they young enough that they can put up their hand and say, we actually stuffed this up. We wanted to stay in contention. It hasn't quite worked for us. We can actually trade them now and bring in picks while they've still got good currency. Or are they not stuck with them, but they're there now for the next 5 to 7 years?
I think right now Hawthorn's problem is their injury list, personally.
So you don't think they're as bad as...
No, I don't think they're as bad as... I've always been more up than down on Hawthorn. I think their core of players, their core of good players is good enough. Like, you look now, their two best probably younger players in Will Day and Granger Barras are injured. Then you've got Sicily, who's injured. You've got Gunston, who's injured at the moment. I know Sean Burgoyne's played 400 games, but he's injured that experience level. So they've got enough injuries in there to suggest that they're still going to be a good enough player. when you've got injuries, though, you've got to continue to blood those younger type players. Now, are they blooding enough younger type players? Are they putting those younger players in the positions that they're potentially going to play and be exposed in to teach them where they've got to get to? That's what I look at in a developing team. You look at North Melbourne on the weekend. They're putting their younger players in positions where they've got to perform. It's either sink or swim. So you look, Simpkin, obviously now is an 80-game player, really well. Davies Uniacke was his best game for the football club on the weekend.
Yeah.
Quite clearly.
But they've got those picks, though. They've got those players, though, don't they, North?
Yeah, but the difference is North Melbourne, we know, are rebuilding. Hawthorn, we don't know what they're doing. All we heard last week was Jeff Kennett talk about in 50 games' time.
Now, I agree.
What does that mean?
Hawthorn
is 50 games' time mean they're knocking on the door of the eight again, or does that mean they're competing again?
No, but I agree with you, Rambo. But my point is that Hawthorn has got the decision to make at the end of this year. We'll find out where they think they're at based on potentially what they do.
If you do what you're talking about doing, you're going to rip the heart out of your list to then potentially go to the bottom of the ladder for the next 5 years.
Mm. But they might be there anyway.
But that's what you're suggesting to do.
If I'm the manager of Mitchell, Wingard or Amira, I'm looking at my options because I'm not seeing anything in the next 5 years to get excited about. And the whole reason they went to Hawthorn was to be part of a successful
team. But you're having a bit each way with this question. You're asking it as a list manager, then you're flipping on its head from a player's point of view.
Well, yeah. But I think it's That's a win. Right. My point is it's a win-win.
Yeah. I want to ask Half because you watch the Hawks.
Just one last one, Jim. You need good players to develop.
I wouldn't get rid of all three.
Correct.
But if one of those three wanted to go to get another first round pick, I'm looking at it.
But I think the question when I watch the Hawks, and Half, you watch them a lot closer than I do, it's the big boy stocks. Like I think decisions need to be made at the end of the year of who you're going in the next 3 years with. It's not, you're going to cop some pain next year, but then 3 years mapping out, when you put the old magnet thing, I feel like Dennis Pagan or those when they went and did the sales pitch. But who are you putting on the board? So I still don't think they're settled. Is Frost and Hardigan stop gaps as key backs?
Yeah.
So then if that's the case, you're looking at key backs in drafts or...
So Granger Barras is...
Granger Barras is that.
Yeah, which
he will be a good player.
Yeah, which
There's
is
no
right.
doubt on that.
And I agree with. So you're starting to answer that riddle down back for the key backs. But you've eventually got to make a decision. And I think it's Kaczynski is one.
Yep. As a key forward?
Key forward. Yep. Are you going Mitchell Lewis?
Jekka?
Yeah. Which of this group are you really going to put the 3 years into? Like, that's theirs, and are you going to go forward? And also you need a transition with the ruck, because big boy is still playing good, solid footy, but 3 years down the track, how old does that make?
35.
Yeah. So I think I'm not saying it's bad. I just think they've got to start answering their own questions with the big tall boys, because I think I'm with Rammer. I think Day's going to be a super player. Granger Barras, these three mids that you talked about, they're not that old and they've got talent. Yad back, I think still Bruce is a super player. Yep.
Sicily's the one that they're really missing at the minute.
We've seen enough from Giath and Hardwick. They're going to be very good players for a while.
So Wingard's 27, turns 28 in July.
Sicily's 26.
Amira's 27. Fine. Who was the other one? Tom Mitchell.
Mitchell.
Tom Mitchell's also 27. Fine. So they're all 27.
Gunston's 29.
Hmm?
Gunston's 29.
Gunston's 29, yeah.
See, I thought Gunston was a bit older than that.
No, he's 29.
30 this year. 30 in October.
They've got an interesting list, because the reason I asked the question about Collingwood and Hawthorn, it was a text message, but I think it's a good comparison because Collingwood's best players, particularly in the midfield, are their oldest players.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas Hawthorn's best players are still mid to late 20s. So I'm talking about Pendlebury and Sidebottom.
Right.
Yeah.
But Crisp is still young.
Yep.
Dacos is still young. Adams. Taylor Adams is still young. There's one I'm missing.
But the feeling with Collingwood is that Sidebottom and Pendlebury both have to play well for Collingwood to win.
Yeah, but Pendlebury, I think now will be transitioned to a half forward flank. And I think he'll play another 3 years probably.
Games.
Is that role? Sidebottom can go and play on a wing anytime he likes, because he can still run.
He could play as a forward and kick 50 goals.
Yeah, he could. So I don't think those two guys you're saying, well, they're going to be out. But Collingwood,
Taylor Adams will take over. When he's back, he'll take over that midfield.
Yep.
It'll be his midfield.
So, Jimmy, you saw this game. You broadcast this game, Sydney and Collingwood, on Saturday.
Yes.
30 points was the margin in favour of the Swans. They were down handsomely at quarter time and then found a way back. How did they do that?
It was a pretty scrappy game because it was blowing a gale up there at the SCG. I think when Sydney made the adjustment of taking the ball forward, I know that sounds oversimplifying it, but in the first quarter, Collingwood were really good in defence and they cut out all the exits, which forced Sydney to kick the ball backwards, sideways, laterally, which allowed Collingwood's defence to get up the ground. So I know metres gained can be a bit of a funny stat because if you kick out from full back, you have 10,500 metres gained because yes. You run 20, just bash it long, there's 80 every time.
Often they run about 50 metres before they bounce it.
But the team distance for the first quarter, Collingwood was in front by 300 metres. Every other quarter after that was about 600-700 metres in Sydney's favour. So they were actually able to play the territory game really well. And in those conditions, territory was important. And then they were able to mark the footy really well. Young McLean took 6 contested marks.
He's showing a bit, isn't he?
Yeah. Marks it at the highest point. He's pretty strong. He's good if he gets caught under the ball. He doesn't then get shifted forward.
Yep.
Which he's got a fantastic frame on him. He doesn't get moved out from underneath it.
So Collingwood kicked 4 goals to 2 in the first quarter.
Yep.
And it looked like they're playing with a bit of dare.
Yeah, the first goal is, I thought, sorry to cut you off there, Ram, I thought, oh, clearly the message here in the week is, let's get some overlap and run. And it was noticeable because everyone was coming from behind. I think it was Crisp coming up through the middle, handball, overlap. And then after quarter time, it was like, we stuffed one up. Let's not do that.
That's what I'm getting at. So was it more, it didn't feel like it was a message from the coach's box to slow it down. It felt like guys, when they made a mistake, they went into their shell a little bit and thought, oh, I'm going to go into protection mode here to protect my spot almost in the team.
Yeah, Sydney dialed up the pressure around the contest, which forced that quick kick out. And we know if you do that against the Swans, they take back shoulder. Thank you for playing. And then off the back of it, they've still got some guys with ball in hand aren't fantastic. Collingwood through the middle of the ground. But they defended super well. And that's always Collingwood's strength. Their back six has always been really, really strong. They've got good structure. And they try and build their side around that. But it was the 4-goal margin was probably reflective of where I think the young groups for both of them are. So Sydney's young groups are 18 months, 2 years more advanced than Collingwood, who are all newbies, really. Yep. So McInerney, who had a super game, he's been there a couple of years. Wicks has been there on their list for a couple of years. McLean, second year, where you compare that to Poulter, Henry, McCreary. Even Darcy Cameron hasn't played a lot of footy, but he's been on the list for a while.
Yep.
It's just 2 years, 4 goals. That was the difference.
You look at guys at Sydney like Warner and
Rowbottom.
Yeah, a couple
of years on the list. Yeah, years on the list.
They're maturing now. They're playing significant minutes in significant positions.
And the reason we had the conversation about Collingwood and Hawthorn, it wasn't to whack Collingwood and Hawthorn, but it's about that list management strategy. And Sydney is an example, 2 years out of the eight, and it looks like they're going to be back again, which shows that's the sort of, if you're developing the young kids well, that it can only be a dip for 2 years potentially.
Yeah, but they weren't forced to trade Kennedy or Parker.
No, they didn't go that way. So they were lucky, not lucky, they had the academy.
It helps when you get Campbell and Goulden.
Yeah.
So, when you don't necessarily have to draft them, you just bid on them and you've got the points ready to go. Yeah.
It's pretty handy. Like Hagen at the Bulldogs.
Yeah, it's pretty handy. Yeah.
So that's the Swans. We're talking about the Magpies. We mentioned the Hawks before, but the Kangaroos are 32 points down.
North Melbourne. So
it was very funny at the start of that song.
Hands to hands.
Yeah. When somebody yelled there, "How's this go again?" When they started to circle up for the song, it was very funny.
It's good.
But they played unbelievably well to get back from 32 points. Why do you touch on this before that it would have been quite easy to throw it in and say, bloody hell, it's not our day again, it's all too hard. Down in Tassie, not our home ground in Tassie, different venue, and the Hawks wrapping about.
I thought that was the most impressive part about it. I mean, yes, they played well, but the character of the group not to sort of say, too hard today.
Well, this is going to be funny. I'm going to answer your previous question about Hawthorn and use North Melbourne as the example why you wouldn't trade them out. So if you were doing the same question for North Melbourne, you'd probably say, Ben Cunnington, would you take him while he's got value, like trade him out? But the proof is why you keep him is because you surround him with Simpkin and Davies Uniacke as the other sort of beast around there. And the knock-on effect, it's like, and again, changing games again, is Buddy Franklin allows McLean to get an easier matchup just by being there.
Yeah.
Ben Cunnington allows Davies, Uniacke and Simpkin to get a better matchup around Bull because he's there. So if you've got Wingard, it allows whoever young, developing, small forward to get a better matchup because if he's not there, the best defender then goes to a young kid and brains him. And he
Ken Brockman can't get a game then. Yeah. He doesn't get a kick.
Yeah.
His name's not Kent.
So I went around in circles three games, but going back to North Melbourne, have you seen clearance numbers from three blokes like that before?
Never seen 37 between three of them. 13-13.
How does that happen?
For Cunnington and Simpkin, 11 for Davies Uniacke.
You know, as a player, when you get them beaten, particularly around the ball, you know when those guys are getting a hand on the ball and you've got to do something about it. I don't understand why Hawthorn players, one, couldn't do anything about it, but also the coaching staff couldn't do anything about that.
Surely you identified after the first 15.
Well, you look at that.
We need to change our structure. Do we need to bring an extra number in? Do we need to play, almost ring it and go, if we're going to lose it? So Melbourne did this really well. So Carlton actually won clearances, but it was such a misleading stat yesterday. I was at that game. I know we're going to go back to it, but I need it for this example. You can win clearances, but it's like inside 50s. You can have inside 50s, and then you can have really good inside 50s. Carlton won clearances yesterday, and they were just jammed on the boot.
That's right. There's a difference between contested clearances and uncontested clearances.
And scores from
contested stoppages. Contested clearances, if you're just bombing the ball, Jim, and what you're talking about,
dirty ball.
Worth nothing.
So that's what Hawthorn needed to identify. Kangaroos were getting it. And look, Ben Cunnington, knowing his ability and knowing what he's really good at, he's so good at drawing that first one and then releasing the handball. So the guy he releases is in the space. He looks up. But if it's not there, he literally goes and seeks someone out and goes, have that. I think I've got a broken sternum. Thanks, Ben.
He's got a firm hand.
Yeah, he knows how to draw and create the outnumber in close. It's great to watch.
So just to emphasise your point, Simpkin and Cunnington had 50 contested possessions between the two of them. Now, marrying that up with Mitchell, who you'd think is Hawthorn's best contested player, he only had 3. He clearly didn't have his best game, but even when you look at, we were talking about this earlier with half, the fact that Warple played almost as a half forward, he only had 16 disposals, but only 8 contested possessions, and even O'Meara played a lot forward as well, coming off injury, he had 11. So it was just a domination by North Melbourne with their two key playmakers.
It was a great result. That was the coach's birthday in Tassie, where he's born. It was a perfect result for David Noble. After a tough 8 weeks, they got one on the road. Well done to the Kangaroos, 7-point winners over the Hawks.
They identified that themselves. You know, that they understood that Zach was getting sat on pretty hard, but which we understand. I think Zach, you know, his discipline and his ability to keep applying himself to the game was really important. You know, I think the stuff around the ball, you know, I think Zach can take, but I think there's a few incidents off ball which, you know, we were able to get free kicks for downfield and hit the scoreboard, which I think's, you know, it's good to see those frees get paid for the off ball stuff.
That is the voice of Ben Rutten. He's the coach of the Essendon Football Club. And they are sitting 3-6, and according to Adam Ramanaskas and the propaganda machine around here, they are knocking on the door.
Kicking it down, I think he says.
Of the final 8. Talking about Zach Merritt there, got tagged yesterday by Caleb Sarong, kept him to 21 disposals, a little bit of off-ball treatment. Justin Longmuir answered that sort of line of questioning and line of response from the Essendon coach by saying, I reckon his players looked after him pretty well behind the ball, saying that what was good for the Goose was in fact good for the Gander. And Essendon's 7-point win over Fremantle yesterday at Marvel Stadium.
That's coaching 101. You've got to get one of those away every year. It's like a little, use the AFL term, tick the box. Senior coach, come out, find your best midfielder and go, he's got to get looked after, doesn't he? We've already heard it from a couple of coaches this year.
That matchup of Merritt and Sarong was a really good one.
It was a great duel.
Yeah, it was a great, great duel. Both of them, Zach worked extremely hard, and Sarong, to his credit as a young player, would have learnt an enormous amount.
In an uncharacteristic role.
Yeah.
No one would have expected that, I don't think.
What, Sarong to go with Merritt?
Yeah, well, Sarong has been hunting the ball this year.
Yeah, this year.
A different role for him to learn. I think it was a great coaching move.
But I thought, when he first started, I thought it was really good by Longmuir last year. Put him on a number of really good players. I think it's been really good.
It's great for a young kid to do that.
Yeah. So I reckon from the start of his career, he's done it. Yeah, I'm with you. They've sort of let
in recent times
freewheel, but I think they've gone, do you know where he's really good? He's playing on and off his direct opponent. It's not a tag, but it's a starting point.
Yeah.
So what was good about the Bombers yesterday, Rammer? Tell me why the Bombers are knocking on the door.
Yeah, come on.
That game went just back and forth yesterday. Now, Fremantle probably wasted a lot of opportunity going forward. Their efficiency going forward, forward to centre, wasn't probably the best. And Essendon also, I think, wasted some opportunities going forward. But what I liked about the Essendon performance, yeah, they just stuck at it. You know, there was moments. I think the game came down to moments in that last quarter. Nick Cox came on as a sub and was really good in that last quarter. The way he played, he set up behind the ball.
Yep.
So Fremantle were bombing it out of their defensive 50. And then Nick Cox, he had five possessions in that last quarter and continued to push the ball back in. Tip and Woody, I think, now, this is not propaganda, but he...
Oh, it might be. It sounds like it might be.
The fact you said that.
Yeah. No. Is this with a... But with all due respect.
He's in now... the better small forwards in the competition. Like, he's kicked 22 goals this year. And he's...
That's a lot of goals.
Yeah. He's doing a really good job. He's obviously averaging more than two a game, so helping out Cale Hooker there. Cale Hooker didn't hit the scoreboard yesterday. But again, you look at Essendon, and I say this week in, week out, you look at what their young players did. Harry Jones had his moments again yesterday as a player. Archie Perkins had his moments. Nick Hines been a terrific pickup for the Bombers.
Did you think that was possible, what Nick Hines done?
I didn't think he had the ball-winning ability. I thought he was like an impact player. Like, clearly, if he gets it 15 times, he's going to open up the game. But I didn't think he had...
Get it 30.
30.
And use it well. Yeah.
The move of Laverty as a defender has really worked.
Even James Stewart was okay.
His Chris Stewart.
Hey, propaganda boy.
You sound surprised.
I'm surprised. Absolutely, I'm surprised with what Ben Rutten's done with remodeling players. It's working.
Can I ask propaganda boy? He made a good statement about McDonald, Tip, and Woody. Like, one of the best key forwards in key small forwards in the game. What's been the change? Is he just reflective of Essendon's ball movement? Is he fitter? Is he just converting? No, is he going to better places?
He's fitter. Because you notice, it's clearly noticeable that he gets to more and more contests now. And that's a big thing. The other one too is obviously Darcy Parrish. We saw him probably come of age a little bit in Anzac Day, but he's continued on with that form. He was comfortably best on ground yesterday. He was a terrific player.
He's been comfortably best on ground a few times this year.
Yep. So, but I think Fremantle jump on the plane last night, probably thinking that's one that they should have got.
Well,
yep.
Justin Longmire was shattered after the game.
Well, Tabner missed some easy ones, some snaps. Walters missed a really easy snap. There's a couple of occasions that last quarter where they just should have scored and they didn't.
Fife still got glad rap on the goals.
Yeah.
38% he kicked at yesterday, Nat Fife. Yeah. He had, what do you have, 16 kicks? 38%. He's a better player than that.
It's a great still photo. I think it's Michael Wilson who takes all the great photos of him actually at point of impact when he's having a set shot. And it was exactly what we're talking about. Back. Yeah, all the power's getting driven across. Mm. His leg is so far across. But I know if some players hook across and that's the finishing spot. But
there's no perfect footballer. Every footballer has some sort of kryptonite.
Well, you sit next to one. He's pretty perfect.
But there's also Ramat.
Lee Matthews.
That was me.
Lee Matthews is pretty awesome.
Pretty close.
Coleman.
There's a bit with Fife, though, that it wasn't so much yesterday, but he's so worried about it that he's just taking blind shots from anywhere just to try and take the pressure off and get a goal out of congestion as opposed to, like a Max King situation from the other night.
In a low-scoring game yesterday, 68-61, it was still a good game of football to watch. The ball went back and forth, and in the end, Essendon won the moments.
Is that sustainable for Essendon? So you go back to Essendon and Carlton. That was two teams who just knew each other were horrible on transition.
Yep.
And it turned out Carlton converted better off the turnover. Is that the way they want to keep playing Essendon, though?
Well, they'll set up much better on transition yesterday because of Laverty, because of Francis, because of Stewart. They had some actual coverage there, whereas Hines gone. Like, he's, you know, they're effectively playing five defenders, even four defenders, because Ridley goes as well.
Because the next question I'll lead into is, with that sort of style, if they were to run into a Melbourne or a Dogs, even the Tiggies, so it's good off turnover.
Yeah. Tricky. Very tricky because you need your midfielders to transition back hard, and that's probably the one area that Essendon don't do. Zach Merritt does it well. He gets all the way to halfback, and he does help. The others, McGrath's getting better at it. Parrish is getting better at it. I think once they can become really good at it, Jim, I think that's when you'll see a more consistent Essendon.
I think the interesting part watching that game yesterday, Jimmy, was that Essendon and Freo are the two sides that are in a similar phase of development. Yep, Fremantle cool. may be a little bit ahead. But yep. I reckon in 5 years' time, those two teams will be two of the better teams in the competition. But Essendon matched it with Freo in the midfield. You know, yep, Freo had Jera. They had, we talked about...
Sarong
with this Brayshaw, Mundy. All these sorts of things. Whereas Essendon have still got to add to that midfield. Caldwell, Scheel. That midfield group's looking quite nice. They still might need a contested beast, but generally speaking, their midfield looks like they've got a pretty good one for the next, you know, 7 or 8 years.
Sounds like propaganda to me.
I won't say anymore.
Boys. Propaganda boy's got a really nice kid on. Are you doing lunches for Essendon and things like that? Finals, lunches.
Are Fremantle getting better? Are Fremantle improving, Jim? Well, anyone can answer that.
There's a lot of
Maradona. Maradona's getting a lot of runs here today. Yeah.
They should have won the game, in my opinion, yesterday, Fremantle, with the opportunity they had. But they butchered it going forward on a number of occasions. Butchered the ball going forward.
They've gone from 4-2 to 4-5. Yeah. They're a bit unlucky in that they had the fixture change. They've been away for quite a while. But there's still a massive difference between what they do at home compared to what they do away.
Craig Tiley's been good enough to join us. We know Craig very well around these parts as the CEO of the Australian Open. He's going to be involved in a big Sport Thought and Leadership Summit on the 17th and 19th of November. Sport NXT, or Sport Next is what it's probably called. He joins us this morning on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Craig.
Morning, guys. I'm actually standing outside Rod Laver Inn. I think the last time we spoke was around the Australian Open time when no one knew it was going to happen.
Yeah, well, that's right. Well, that's...
you included.
Yeah, no, that's right. I was no different. I think you guys knew more than I did.
Well, you'd be surprised what we know or what we don't know, Craig. Well, tell us about this Sport Next conference, the Global Sport Conference. What is it? What does it mean?
Well, certainly for the city of Melbourne and our state of Victoria, it's something special. There's a group of sports leaders that... started initiating this, which is going to be a thought leadership summit, as you said, but really the forerunner and the leader of all sports minds, coming together during that 2-day period, and the first one this year in November. In fact, everyone's hoping to get it up last year, but it's going to but during the pandemic that was not possible. But now doing it this year, some of the best minds in sports, particularly, will come together and share some views and ideas on different topics, and it fits right into to Melbourne being the sporting capital of the world, and now to have what will be the largest and probably the best sports conference or sports summit globally.
Craig, with sports and obviously all the people that are there. Leaders want to steal the pie and eat it all themselves. Do you talk about sharing the pie and how you can actually grow sport collectively rather than individually?
No, it's all about dog eat dog. I'm just kidding. It's from the competitive point of view. But no, I think that's what's great about it. In fact, that's one of the massive, really positives that's come out of this period of the last 18 months is that sports have been far more cooperative and have really realized that the competition is not so much, it's not so much, again, trying to pursue other ideas from others, but also, compete for the grassroots participant. But it's more about what we can do cooperatively and realizing that our competition generally of sports is of entertainment platforms, other entertainment platforms, and a sedentary lifestyle, the couch, really. So I think that the cooperation amongst sports has been great, and this summit has an opportunity to bring that together even further, and to build on ideas that have worked for others that other sports can then adopt. So I think there's a very strong cooperative spirit, and I think this is something unique for Melbourne and for Australia, and the way that Melbourne do events and Victoria do events with the support of the Victorian government. Is unique and the best in the world. So this will be, in our minds, become the best in the world as well.
So that cooperation has been evident between yourself and the NBL, with the NBL playing a game when the Australian Open's on there, and it's, you know, it's a big extravaganza there. Has any other sport come to you during that 2 weeks period and say, well, how can we work together? How can we do something together that's going to, as you say, bring Melbourne to the forefront even more?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and you know, I do play a role as chair of COMPS, which is the Coalition of Major Professional Participation Sports, and those seven major sports, they represent about 80% of the participation in organized sports, those the seven major sports, and we are now having very regular conversations around you know, what are the what are the opportunities for us to do things collectively. In fact, even in our submissions for funding to the federal government, was for the first time ever, was done as a sport group and not individually for sports. And so it's a unique time in our lives where sports can be very cooperative, and we are doing things together. We're sharing IP on events. We're even sharing staff. We've got seasonal staff that are working three or four different sports during the year. You know, we also spoke to netball about the possibility of doing some activity during the Australian Open, for example. We've had NBL, and Larry Kesselman and Jeremy and the crew have been fantastic. We feel like we're partners in everything we do. And then the same applies to just how we talk about things now. With one of us go to a supplier and you know, and access maybe some data or digital information, and then that can be shared by other sports. So we're doing a lot more things than we've done before. And I think this Sport Next will be a summit that will bring that together even more. But also do it on a global scale, because some of the participants in Sport Next, which will be announced today, are going to be some of the best sports administrators and leaders globally. And I think this is a great initiative, and the Victorian government should again be congratulated for thinking about this and getting this going, because it's not going to it's going to reinforce why, you know, we're the world's sports and entertainment capital.
I didn't think we exerted any sort of control or overall dominance really for the whole night, but I think, you know, what the season is teaching us is, you know, the teams, including us, will come with a pressure game and a physical game, and it's just how long we can last in that, and that was what I was most pleased about. We were able to last the four quarters in the physicality in the pressure game, so from that point of view, it was very encouraging.
Helps when you kick six goals in the first quarter on the road against the Power. That's the voice of Luke Beveridge, the coach of the Western Bulldogs, who rocketed into second position on the table. Two games clear now in a second after their win over the Port Adelaide Power. Jim?
Okay, gentlemen, who did it say more about?
I want you to answer that shortly, Jim, but I want to talk to Zane Cordy about it as well.
Let's talk to Zane.
Because he was there living it at the Adelaide Oval on Saturday night. Good morning, Zane.
Morning, boys. How are we going?
Going very well, thanks. Who did it say more about, you guys or the Power?
That's a pretty tough question, actually. no, it was a good win. I rate Port Adelaide pretty highly, so to be able to go over Adelaide and get the win was a pretty big night for us.
Was it one of those build-ups? There's always games in seasons where, you know, you know you've got to be on edge for every game and all that sort of stuff, and you want to win every game. But this was a big one. We talked about it on Friday. This was a big one to work out what you could do, what you could achieve this season. You've been really good in patches. I mean, we all go back to that Richmond game. But this was a big one. Was it built up differently from Luke?
No, it was a bit more of the same, actually. It was more just sticking to what our system is, playing to our strengths. And if we provide a full quarter effort with a bit of pressure, a bit of intensity, we usually get the job done. So it was a pretty simple messaging. I think it was more just the hostile crowd that sort of got us up and about. The Port Adelaide fans can get quite rowdy, so it got the boys a little bit excited.
That's surprising, Zane. They're normally a polite group who like to clap and cheer along, the Port Adelaide supporters. But do you feel like, I guess, your form is coming from pressure within? There seems to be some real pressure for spots. There's a stack of guys who are fit and ready to go in your VFL side. Is that what driving the performance?
I'd say so. Yeah, competition for spots is quite healthy at the moment. Our VFL side is undefeated, going very well, and yeah, boys are playing well. So if you don't play well at AFL, well, you're most likely to get left out of the team the next week. So I think it's put a lot of pressure on the boys, but it's also a healthy thing.
Now, your inspirational skipper was in here in the studio last week, Zane, and he made the comment that he thought you were a better team this year than your premiership year. Now, that doesn't mean everything, but you were part of the premiership. Do you think you're better?
Overall, I do think we are. Obviously, in that year, we had a lot of injuries, and we sort of had to try to fill in the roles as blokes who usually don't play their normal position. I was playing forward at the time, and I hadn't played forward my whole career. So it was sort of just like a team stuck together in 2016. But this year, we seem to have a lot of healthy guys, all playing in their right positions, and it seems to be working so far.
Yeah, and so Saturday night, what did you learn from that Richmond sort of fade out? I don't know what you want to call it, because you started that game really well and Richmond sort of upped the pressure and sort of went over the top of you. Similar sort of situation could have potentially happened on Saturday night, but you held firm and kind of kicked again. So what did you learn from Richmond that you're able to then use in that Port Adelaide game?
Oh, I think Richmond sort of showed us is when they kick up a gear, we need to kick up a gear as well. And we just didn't do that against them. Their pressure sort of got on top of us. And especially coming out of the back half, we sort of panicked a little bit with the ball in hand. So, this week we definitely tried to have more composure across the back line, find that mark to relieve the pressure and go from there. So I feel like we did a lot better this week.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.